Well, we seem to be getting into deep water. I don't know why.
Don't you?
No.
Christian kisses him on the lips. At the RSPCA, Brian runs to Neil and Sean.
Leave him!
Sean drops a bloody knife.
What about the woman?
What woman?
The RSPCA inspector. She saw us.
Some little shit is dead and he shouldn't be right. What matters now is that our son walks away from this without ruining his life.
A crime that happened a long time ago. A crime that has happened exactly the same way now as it did then.
A jogger is hit over the head.
I've always admired the way animals fight to protect their young.
At the RSPCA, a cloth is stuffed to the letterbox and lit. There is an explosion. Christine is hurled to the floor. Frost finds a message, "You die next," written on his car windscreen. David Jason as Jack Frost. He's in his late 60s with graying hair and a moustache. A Touch of Frost. Based on the characters created by R.D. Wingfield, Frost closes the gate of a cell and smiles wryly at the camera. This episode, If Dogs Run Free, Part 2. Screenplay by Michael Russell. Two fire engines are stationed outside the RSPCA. The forecourt is crawling with firemen.
George! George! Come here!
George runs over to join Frost.
I suppose there is no doubt that it was arson.
Well, the chief fire officer thinks so, yes. But we need forensics, Jack. They should be able to get into the reception now. That's where the fire started.
Right.
A silver sports car speeds along the motorway, weaving in and out of the traffic. Directed by Paul Harrison. At the hospital, Frost goes over to Christine's bed. She's fast asleep, propped up on the pillows, her head lying peacefully to one side. Frost stands beside her, then gently takes her hand. Her eyes flicker open. She waves at him with her other hand. The silver car continues to zoom down the motorway. Back at the hospital.
I suppose you want a statement.
Well, you have been conscious for at least 10 minutes, so we ought to get started, shouldn't we?
No jokes. Laughing's what hurts.
She winces in pain and starts to sob.
Hey, come on. Come on now, you're doing so well.
Mullet opens the observation hatch on Neil's cell door. Neil continues munching his food calmly. Mullet closes the hatch. He's with the custody sergeant.
Unless they're charged, we're going to have to release them.
Mullet slides open the peephole on Sean's cell door. Sean's sitting on his bunk, staring into space. The sergeant lets Mullet out of the cell area.
Mrs. Moorhead's lucky to be alive. Don't know how she feels now about being the only witness we have.
The silver car races down a country lane and pulls up by a hedge. The door opens and a man vomits on the tarmac. A red postal van passes by. In the hospital corridor, Frost spots two teenagers, a boy and a girl, with an older man.
Ah! Hello. It's Sophie, isn't it? And Joshua. I'm Inspector Frost, Jack Frost.
Is she all right, Mr. Frost?
Oh, well, yes, she's going to be fine.
You guys go and see Mum? I'll catch you up.
Yes, she's right down the corridor on the left.
They walk away.
Alan Moorhead.
Oh, how do you do?
I gave the kids an edited version of what happened. Is she all right?
Yes, she's going to be fine. But the line between that and what might have been, well, it's pretty close.
Was this fire an accident?
No, we don't think it was.
I gather you're a friend as well. Christine won't think that's any of my business, but we've got two children whose safety makes it my business.
Yes, of course. Well, Christine will fill you in with the details. I'm afraid that I must be off. Nice to meet you.
And you.
Yeah, bye-bye.
They shake hands and Frost walks away, eyebrows raised. The silver car now zooms towards an S-bend. It takes a corner at speed and runs into a woman riding her bike with the child on board. The bike falls sideways to the ground. The car pulls up further down the road. There's a cut on the woman's cheek. She and her child lie motionless. The car waits for a moment, then darts off into the distance. Frost returns to the police station. He walks through reception and spots something through the corridor window.
So, if you'd just like to check through all the details, make sure it's all correct, and sign at the bottom, please.
It's solicitor Gregory Salmon signing the form. Frost enters the room.
What do you want, Mr. Salmon?
Don't worry, Inspector, not you. The car's been stolen last night.
Really? Well, quite a lot happened last night, then.
Something I should know about?
You judge. There was a fire at the RSPCA centre. Fire brigade tell us it was arson. So if Mr. Burland hasn't been in touch with you, he will be.
Is that an accusation, Inspector?
Mrs. Moorhead was in the clinic last night when it was firebombed.
Frost storms out, leaving Salmon looking concerned. Frost meets Trigg in the archive room.
Now, they called him the cat killer. Not because he killed cats, no, no. No, because he used cats at least twice to get his victims to stop.
Yes, yes, I know all that, Trigg.
Yes, I'm just cranking up my motor. It's a long time ago, you know, 20 years.
22?
What?
It's here. Look.
Frost joins Jenny at the computer. There's a photo of a balding man on the screen.
Daniel Ruckman. Where's Daniel Ruckman now?
Well, it was another 2 years before he was caught. He killed two more women by then, though. But that's all I've got on the computer.
Daniel Ruckman. Died 21st of April, 2003, Broadmoor. Transferred from Leeds in 98. 10 years to work out who's barking mad.
Well, it looks like you were right, Trigg. We got two crimes that are the same as something that happened years ago.
Three?
What?
If Mr. Trigg is right about the attack on your car and the smashed kitchen window.
Hmm. All right, get me everything you can on the underpass, the cat killer, and the attacks on officers' cars. Right?
He opens the door.
Oh. And see if there's anything about something being written on a windscreen.
Like what?
Like a death threat.
George writes on the incident board with a felt tip.
George, There was a kitten where Philip Hedden was killed. Where is it?
I don't know, Jack.
Well, find it.
Salmon meets his colleagues, Alice and Mansell Smith.
Jerry Burland's been trying to reach you all morning. No charges against his son or the other boy. They're due for release. He wants to know why you're not on it.
That's not all he wants me on.
Well, I don't want him on my back.
All right.
Anything on the car, Greg?
No, and I don't have high hopes.
They walk away from Salmon.
Burland's paying us a lot of money.
It's Greg's problem, not mine.
Yeah, but he is a problem. It certainly doesn't do much for the reputation of this practice.
Since when has that been any concern of yours?
Well, I hope it soon will be, Alice.
Neil's parents escort him from the police station to their car. Behind them, Burland puts his arm around Sean's shoulder, then turns to Neil.
Neil, call over tomorrow. Party.
Burland makes a drinking gesture with his hand. Neil's parents seem unimpressed. Burland looks back at the police station and spots Frost watching him from the window. Burland points to his eye, then to Frost. Frost raises his eyebrows. Mullet joins Frost at the window.
The RSPCA. Burland has an alibi?
His house was burgled. And he made such a fuss that no one from CID was turned out. So his alibi is Georgie Toolan.
Be careful about making it too personal, Jack. That's a weapon his lawyer will use against us.
Well, how would I want to make it personal?
Christine arrives home to find her dog sniffing the mail on the floor. She picks up the letters. Then she looks at her reflection in the mirror and shakes her head. She walks into the kitchen and drops her bags on the table, then takes her mobile and dials a number. She also starts to open a plain brown envelope.
Hi, Maxine. Christine Moorhead. Emergency. Let's say my hair needs some attention. Can you come to the house? Oh, great. Oh, you're an angel. Thanks. See you then. Bye.
In the envelope are some cut-up photos of Joshua and Sophie. A red X has been drawn over Joshua's face. Christine stares at them in horror.
He'd had someone following my kids, Jack, photographing them.
Frost puts the photos in a plastic bag.
Burland is not going to get away with this, Christine. He is not, I promise you.
I made a decision. Nobody would intimidate me out of telling the truth about Brian's murder, but it's not me I'm afraid for, Jack. Not now.
She goes out into the corridor, evidently upset. Burland goes into Marek Lizowski's flat. Marek holds a lighter in his hand. He sits staring at the flame.
All right, Marek.
She shuts up, right?
Ah, she shut up all right. It's a surprise, though, she hasn't been shut up for good. You remember the brief, yeah? A small fire after the place was empty.
The job is done.
Yeah. I think you've been sampling too much of the merchandise, me old son.
He drops a wad of notes on the table.
You should take a holiday, Marek, eh? Poland. See the family.
A little packet full of powder.
By the way, here's a wee bonus for you. Some of the Taliban's bests. Knock yourself out.
Forensics examine the silver car.
Sir George, we found Mr. Salmon's pride and joy then, have we?
Yeah. Someone tried burning it out by the Fernside shopping centre. They weren't very good at it. But it's not your average nicked car.
George beckons him over to a table and picks up some evidence bags.
Keys. Still in the ignition. And this. 50 grams of cocaine found in the boot. And the car also matches the description of a hit-and-run that's put a four-year-old girl in hospital. She's in a coma.
Frost spots some scratches down the side of the car. Later, he watches as the injured woman cyclist looks through some photos of the car. A young man stands beside her.
That's it. That's the car.
Are you sure?
It was only a moment. I can still see it now.
She gets up slowly, her arm in a sling.
You know who did it.
This car was reported stolen the night or the morning before the accident. Now, we have this car, and if there are any traces of the bike on it, we know it's the one.
Salmon.
It's not just about finding the car. It's about what was in it. I just bought some coke, quite a lot, and it was in the box.
Alice.
You left it in your car.
I was out of my tree. Alice, I don't even remember getting home.
Do I want to hear this?
If they think the drugs are something to do with me, then
why
we...
would they? Criminals steal cars. They use them for crimes.
Well, I would have to prove that I was at home that night and that I never went out.
He looks at her guardedly. She smiles and goes up close to him.
You expect me to lie for you?
I'm not saying they could prove anything, but surely it's better for all of us if they don't even try. The question of what I would be doing with that much coke.
He kisses her on the cheek. Mansell Smith watches through the window at the police station.
Mugging, a murder, and a bike rider who's into ancient history.
Your ancient history, Jack.
And now a death threat.
Words on a windscreen. Doesn't put us in a position to make a link, does it?
Well, if we hadn't lost the evidence, of course.
I was in no position to do a forensic examination last night, was I?
Anyway, who's ever doing this knows a lot about you. You specifically. And now a man is dead. What about the RSPCA? Is there any way this could be linked to Burland?
No. No. Burland's too clever to threaten me. Oh, Trigg's right. If the death threat does connect, it'll be with the mountain bike attacks.
Jenny and I are trying to find a link between the original attacks 20 years ago.
Yeah, but there was no link then, was there?
Well, they both gave you a hard time. There was a lot of criticism of CID. The criminals went on to commit similar crimes. To kill. There was a feeling things were missed. I'm not saying it's true.
No, maybe it was. I mean, it wasn't Dent and CID's finest hour, was it? Or mine either, come to that.
The attacks on officers' cars was never solved. Not in the same league, I know, but still a failure. Someone's rubbing your nose in it, Jack. That's the nearest I can get.
No. It goes deeper than that. We're investigating a murder.
I know we are, Jack. And until it's proved otherwise, I'm taking it that this death threat is real.
Mullet walks out. Frost raises his eyebrows at Jenny, then follows him at the RSPCA.
Cat's about 5 months old.
Anything distinctive?
No. If we had an Abyssinian, a Persian or a Russian blue, you could start with a list of breeders.
They look at the cat sitting in its pen.
This is all Moggy. I couldn't guess how many of these are born round Denton in a week. Dumped, drowned, thrown out of cars, and occasionally given a loving home.
Would it have been bought?
Probably not. Oh, but this was. Most cats don't even get a collar. A big pet shop would sell dozens of dog leads in a week. They wouldn't sell one of these in a month.
I take it like that, thank you.
He takes a cat lead, a handkerchief over his fingers.
I thought you were going to get your hair done.
Frost and George approach the space reserved for Salmon's car in the solicitor's car park.
No barrier, no CCTV. Easy enough to steal a car from here, especially if you leave the keys in the ignition. Hello, here he is.
Salmon pulls up in his silver Mercedes.
Ah, Inspector.
Hello. Not bad, eh? Living above the shop?
Yeah, well, only during the week, you know. So, good news, found the car then? What's the damage?
Neil's father is cleaning his car when he sees a smaller red car pull into Berlin's drive. Then a black vehicle creeps past and also parks in front of Berlin's house, along with a host of other cars. Neil comes out of his front door and strides towards the party.
I thought you didn't want anything to do with Sean anymore.
If Sean and I didn't do anything, we should be behaving like we didn't, according to Mr. Berland.
You do everything, he says.
Why not? You do.
Neil walks away through the bushes, Frost to Salmon.
What time did you arrive home?
Just before nine, with my girlfriend, Alice Parmenter.
She can vouch for that, can she?
Yeah. Sorry, I don't mean to come the heavy-handed solicitor, but particularly when you found my car so quickly, but why am I being interrogated?
A time frame, Mr. Salmon.
Right. Well, like I said, we got back just before nine, and I didn't leave again the next morning till ten, when I saw the car was gone.
So the car could have been stolen that night or the next morning?
Well, I guess.
Salmon smiles and looks bemused.
Did you know that there was nearly £2,000 worth of cocaine in the boot?
No. No, So it was stolen for a crime, then?
I guess.
But they dumped the car with the drugs in it. That's a little... Well, it's a little odd, isn't it?
Well, the car was also involved in an accident. A serious hit and run that put a little girl in Denton Hospital. She's in a coma. A mother and father are praying that she'll come out of it. So what I need from you, Mr. Salmon, is evidence that your car was really stolen.
Berlin's house.
All right, everybody. There's some drinking in there.
Neil and the other teenagers stand around awkwardly. Sean is upstairs in his room, playing on a drum kit.
Sean, what are you doing up here? Come on, it's like a wake down there.
Awake. Yeah, that's cool, Dad.
Oh, son, come on. Put it behind you, come on, put it behind you. You don't need to think about this stuff again. It's all right. Come downstairs.
Berland walks out. Sean throws his headphones on the floor, grabs a bottle of beer, and opens a drawer by his bed. Inside, some tablets lie on a piece of silver foil. He pops one in his mouth. In the kitchen, Berland finds his wife, Sally, fetching drinks from the fridge.
There's hardly anybody here.
What did you expect?
Mates to rally round. It's what people do when there's trouble.
You're confusing people with us, Jerry. Most people don't have a party when a boy gets killed.
He slaps her with the back of his hand and walks out. At Christine's house, Frost lays a table with Sophie.
Aloo gobi, or gobi, as some people say. Bombay aloo. Well, you can't have enough potatoes if you're having Indian. That's what I always say. Prawn madras and chahiki madras. Now for the rice.
Lovely.
What's the matter? Don't you like Indian?
We don't usually have it in quite such large amounts, Mr. Frost.
Right. Well, look, call me Jack, please.
Is that your real name?
No, my real name is William. But don't tell your mother because she'll be using it.
Christine comes in.
Wow. Right. Let's dish up, shall we?
Right, yeah. Okay.
Could you go and get Josh for me?
Yep.
She relieves him of the takeaway box.
He's upstairs.
Upstairs, right.
Follow the noise.
He leaves Christine and Sophie alone.
What's going on now, Mum?
Nothing. I've been working with Inspector Frost. He's been very kind to me.
I see. This is all part of a community policing scheme, is it?
Upstairs.
Oh. Dinner's ready.
Mr. Frost?
Hmm?
You know the fire at Mum's work?
Yeah.
Well, she says it was an accident. I don't believe her.
Frost just puts his hands in his pockets. Joshua gets up from his bed.
Look, you won't get on very well with us if you don't tell us the truth. Well, with me anyway.
Would you like me to get on well with you?
Mum will want you to.
Joshua walks out and Frost smiles to himself. A police car passes a black vehicle parked by the curb in a narrow street. A constable gets out and knocks on the driver's window. The constable opens the door and Marek's lifeless body falls into his arms. Marek's flat, Frost searches in the bins while George rifles through the cupboards.
Oh. Well, at least we know who's been following Christine's kids.
Petrol? Tar? Sugar?
And you set fire to the RSPCA clinic, eh?
As close as you're going to get to the forensic analysis of what did it.
Yeah. Who was he?
Well, he rented the room as Joseph Malkovich. The landlord thought he heard him speaking Polish on the telephone. His name in the driving licence is Marek Lazowski.
Lazowski?
He points at some bags of powder.
Look at this. Cause of death, do you reckon? This bloke worked for Berland.
So do we bring Berland in?
No. No, no, not yet. I don't want him to know about Lazowski. Not until we know more. Now, you didn't investigate Mr. Berland's burglary, did you? Mm-hmm.
When I turned up, it was all he could do to stop laughing.
Yeah, well, I know. But you see, you didn't interview the neighbours, did you? There was no forensic, no dogs.
Berland's lounge crawls with forensic officers.
Very often, it's not for a while after the burglary that people realise what, in fact, has been taken. If you'd like to look at this list that your husband gave Sergeant Toulon.
There's nothing else, Inspector. I wasn't even here. Jerry,
I'm sure he's filled
you in.
What's
the meaning of piling in here and searching my house? I mean, where's your warrant?
We're investigating a burglary, sir. You asked for CID involvement and, well, here we are. And, of course, we don't need a search warrant to investigate a crime scene, do we?
Just going upstairs, Governor.
Yeah, good. Carry on.
Yeah, but they didn't go upstairs, did they?
Ah, but you don't know. You can't be too sure. And I wouldn't want you to feel that we weren't taking this seriously.
Yeah. Right, well, I mean, it's no big deal. I was a bit upset on the night, that's all. It was actually Sally I was
is, worried about, you know, being on the house on her own. Right, love?
He looks at her meaningfully. She manages a weak smile.
Well, she seems to be holding up.
Frost walks away, but Burland follows.
Listen, Inspector Frost, I appreciate what you're doing, but honestly, they were in and out in minutes. I doubt you'll find any clues, really.
Well, the way we handle these things, sir, is that it sends out a message to the villains that we're serious.
Governor!
Yeah?
Upstairs.
Excuse me, sir.
Upstairs, a dog is sniffing the drawer by Sean's bed. George lifts up the silver foil containing the tablets.
They were in the drawer. The dog got them as soon as he walked in the room. It's probably ecstasy.
Burland comes in.
Oh, dear. Drugs. Ecstasy. You do realise that these are a Class A prohibited substance, don't you? Oh, well, of course you do. Are they Sean's or are they yours, Mr. Burland?
Sean sits in the interview room next to Salmon.
My client is not prepared to answer any questions now. He'll give a statement later, at which point he will answer your questions. I hope it won't be necessary to take him into custody. Even a successful prosecution would be unlikely to generate more than a fine.
George and Frost sit opposite them.
Think about it, Sean. All of it, I mean. Think hard.
Later, Burland leads Sean and Salmon to his car.
Stupid Torag. I want to beat the living shit out of you. The more intelligent dogs. Just get in the car.
Salmon opens the boot of his own car.
Jerry, listen, I'm getting a bit uneasy.
About what?
What happened to Christine Moorhead?
Well, that's got something to do with me.
I didn't say that.
Then what are you saying?
I am saying I'm going to find it very difficult to represent you if the truth becomes too unpalatable.
Look, you're involved with a lot of things that a lot of people might find unpalatable, including Jack Frost. Now, you just remember that.
Burden looks back towards the police station. Once again, Frost is watching him from the window. In the incident room...
Oh, George, what have you got on Salmon's car?
We've got footage of it on the bypass before the accident.
Yeah?
There's no doubt how erratic the driving is.
Oh, good.
Trying to work backwards from there. Any news on the girl?
Still the same.
Do you think it was him?
I know he's lying.
Jack.
Hello.
I've had a chance to look at Lazowski. He was a regular heroin user, and he injected shortly before he died.
What, an overdose?
He wouldn't have thought so.
What do you mean?
This wasn't just any heroin. This stuff was so pure that a normal dose would kill anyone. Now, I mean, I don't know where Lazowski got it, but if dealers are selling this in Denton, you'd be picking bodies up off the streets.
Well, could it have been bad luck?
No. Well, it's possible it was bad luck or incompetence, but it's unlikely. I'd say this stuff was designed to kill.
Burland finds Sean standing on their patio.
Right. Your mother says I'm not allowed to kill you, but as you know, I don't normally follow her advice, but I'm going to give you a break this time, Sean, so listen up. Here's the scoop. There are a lot of things that are difficult in this world, but you just have to deal with them. There's two types of people, right? There's scum and there's us. Scum do drugs. Nobody in my family goes near
you
drugs.
You sell the bloody stuff.
Yeah, but that's because it's my business, Sean, right? Nobody questions me about that. If I see any sign of this again, you're going to be carrying the bruises for a month, right?
Sean looks away from him.
It's for your own good, son. Yeah? Sean.
Sean glares at him.
Come on. Let's talk about something else, yeah? What about the two of us going on holiday, yeah? What about going to the States?
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, all right? Yeah, all right. Come on.
They hug. Sally watches through the window. In the police archives room...
It was the last 3 months from the Met. There's a man they wanted in connection with two suspicious deaths. They were both drug dealers. The man was foreign.
Hold on, I'm getting there.
Oh, Jenny, come on. Can't you come and give him a hand, you know, crank him up?
I only do ancient history. Sorry.
Oh, pity. All right, try 2 months, entry.
Yes, I got it, yeah. A body found in Tottenham, a body found in Chiswick by the river, same heroin. and a description of the man wanted in connection with.
Right, let me see that. Yes. See, according to this description, this could be Lazowski. I'm off to the Met.
He hurries out, holding the paper found by Trigg. At New Scotland Yard in London, he stands in a corridor looking at a photo of the dead Marek.
Jack?
He is approached by a dark-haired man in his late 40s.
Ah, well. Been a long time.
Yep.
Mm. Do you want to come up?
No. I want some information that you may not want to tell me for all sorts of reasons that you are going to say are operational. So I think it's better if we were off the premises.
A local pub.
We didn't have a name. That's the man. He was a fixer for Berland. Then he disappeared. We had a witness who thought he might be Polish. So we wondered whether maybe he'd gone back home.
And he was only in Denton.
Yeah, well, he was off our radar.
You ought to be looking at the range you're getting on that radar of yours.
They sit down in the lounge.
Well, we still can't get enough evidence to put Berland away, and, well, he's making it very hard for us to track him.
So, it's all needs-to-know stuff, is it?
He's no joke. You know that.
Frost leans forward confidentially.
I've got a dead body that I think Berland is responsible for. I've got a friend who's lucky to be alive. I've got a dead boy who wouldn't be dead if Berland didn't live in Denton. Now, I intend to make my problems his problems and bang him up. He should be inside already, considering the Met's resources. And that's what you left us for, wasn't it? The bright lights.
We have had the chance to put Berland away for a couple of years. But there's no point doing that if you can leave his infrastructure intact.
Oh, his infrastructure. That's a word you never learned at Denton, Nick.
I would be grateful for anything you've got on Berland. Anything at all.
You wouldn't have had the job that you got if I hadn't given you the thumbs up. You don't think they took your word about how good you were, do you? No, they picked up the phone and spoke to your governor.
Jack, I'm not in a position to give you any information which we're still active on.
But you will, though, won't you, sir?
Salmon to Alice.
Look, I know Frost. He thinks I was driving the car, he thinks I hit the girl, and he thinks the drugs have got something to do with me.
He's right about that.
Yeah, well, he's not right about the rest.
Greg, I have given you an alibi. What else do you want? You're a solicitor, for God's sakes. If there's nothing the police can prove, then there's no case.
She turns away from him. He shuffles nervously.
Sorry. It's just... I'm wound up about Jerry Berland, too. He is playing a dangerous game, and we shouldn't be involved.
We're not. Whatever he's doing, we don't want to know. You are his solicitor, not his bloody priest.
All right. Sorry.
He kisses her. She pulls away a little.
You'll be fine. Don't worry.
She walks away, leaving him looking uncomfortable.
Right.
He goes out into the lobby. He passes Mansell Smith, who waits till he's gone before entering Alice's office. Alice turns from the window, clearly concerned.
You know, sooner or later you're going to have to tell him about us.
He grins and perches on her desk. She turns back to the window.
Not entirely sure there's an us to tell him about, David.
Well, that side of things doesn't matter much anyway, but we did have a chat about a partnership for me.
I haven't forgotten.
Good. Some things are easy to forget, Alice, but some things do just keep popping up again.
She forces a weak smile. He saunters out. Alice closes her eyes and arches her neck back. The woman cyclist and her boyfriend watch over their little girl at the hospital. The girl's eyes are still closed, and there's an oxygen mask over her face. A nurse adjusts her bedsheets. The couple hold hands. George is in a pet superstore.
We don't sell many. Mostly it's people with real pedigrees who buy them, and only certain kinds. Siamese, Burmese.
Did you sell this one?
I'm sure I did. Not very long ago, either. A week or 10 days.
You remember who bought it?
Very well. A woman.
Is there anything distinctive?
She had a fantastic mountain bike outside. I'd give my eye teeth for it.
Looking at a computer photo of it.
Now, you say when it feels right, it doesn't matter how long it takes.
Okay. Well, I have a picture in my mind. It's not as clear as I thought. But I can see the hair and the face shape. Can we start with that? Mm.
Later, Frost goes into George's office.
All right, George. How'd you get on with the photo fit? Anything worthwhile?
I don't know.
What do you mean?
Well, we've got a likeness. We've got a very good likeness. If it's right, that is.
Oh, is it someone we know?
George shows him the image. Frost's face falls.
Like I say, if it's right.
It's the image of a young woman, her dark hair in a ponytail, Jenny. Jenny turns from the mirror in her bathroom. In another room, she opens a small cupboard and pulls out a box. Inside is a large black pistol. She strokes her cheek with the barrel of the gun, her eyes full of tears. George and Frost arrive outside her red brick suburban house.
All right, George, you get round the back.
George moves down the side of the house. Frost licks his lips pensively, then goes to the front door. The door opens, but it's George.
Back door was open.
Oh, right.
Frost steps into the hall.
Well?
It doesn't look as though there's anybody here. There's a mountain bike in the yard. I'd say it's the one the pet shop woman saw.
All right. You check upstairs.
Frost walks through to the backyard and spots the mountain bike propped against a wall. He nods and turns into the kitchen.
Jack.
Hello.
You better come up here. You need to see this.
Frost heads upstairs. George shows him through an open doorway into a dimly lit room. On the table is a box neatly placed between a WPC's hat and a constable's helmet. The wall is covered in photos and newspaper clippings. One framed picture shows a man in a policeman's uniform. Beside it, a clipping reads, "Arson attack on detective's house," with Frost's photo underneath the headline.
Eric Edwin. Jenny is Eric's daughter. Last time I was here, she was 8 years old.
Cuttings, files. It's all about you. All the photographs of you, they've all been defaced.
Another headline, police accused of racist practices.
Yep, Jack?
Yeah?
They found her.
A tall office building. Jenny sits calmly on the roof ledge, the ground several stories below. A WPC leads Frost towards her.
If we move any closer, she says she'll jump. The only person she'll talk to is you, sir.
Frost spots Jenny, sitting with her back to them.
Pity about my vertigo, innit?
Frost reluctantly walks away from George and the WPC. He crosses the roof space towards Jenny. He steps up onto the ledge, keeping hold of the iron railing.
I knew there was something. I mean, I didn't recognise you, but you were always familiar.
When I was a kid, I loved the sound of sirens. I thought it was Dad going to catch robbers. Dad and you.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
I never meant to kill the man in the lane. He wasn't meant to die.
No, I know. But you did the tyres and the window, didn't you? No, that doesn't matter. But the woman in the underpass, Jenny, you could have killed her, too.
It was just to show you.
Show me what, love?
I didn't know what to do when the job at Denton came up. It wasn't an accident.
Dad sent me. Mum's gone now. 6 months ago. She was never the same after he died. I knew I had to find a way to make you remember, like he remembered all the bad things you did to people you hurt. Dad knew.
I made a mess of a lot of things. I admit that.
He didn't deserve what you did.
Jenny, your father and I were good friends for a long time. I remember that. I made a mistake because he was a good friend. I ignored things that I shouldn't have ignored.
Being a policeman was his life, and you took it all away. He wanted to find a way to pay you back.
Jenny, you were only 8 years old. You didn't understand what was going on. You didn't understand that what he was doing was wrong.
I understand what you did.
He was planting evidence on people.
Liar!
Whether they were innocent or guilty, that was wrong.
It's not true.
And some of those people were innocent.
He trusted you.
Frost breathes deeply.
Jenny, there are people you can talk to. There are people who can help. You don't have to jump.
She turns and stares at him. Slowly, she swings her legs back onto the roof.
That's it. Very good. That's good.
She pulls a gun from her belt.
Stay where you are, George.
I don't need to jump. But you will. One way or another.
He backs away towards the edge of the roof.
And if I don't jump, you will shoot me, eh?
He looks down to the ground far below, his hands raised. She aims a gun at his head.
I don't like heights, you know, Jenny.
George creeps forward.
I get very frightened of heights. In fact, I'm terrified of heights. Stay, George!
Frost grabs the gun and throws her to the floor. They lie motionless in a heap.
Get an ambulance! Quickly!
A medic attends to Frost. He gives him oxygen and feels his pulse. George rushes over.
You all right? Yeah.
He watches a stretcher being wheeled towards an ambulance. Jenny's lying on it, an oxygen mask over her face. Later, Frost is sitting at Edwin's desk, next to a filing cabinet strewn with papers. George is in the doorway behind him.
Poor devil. He spent his last years following everything that I did.
What for?
Evidence. He was hoping that he'd discover something that would get me kicked out of the force. Like he was kicked out. I mean, look, he's got it all here, look. Newspaper cuttings. Letters. He's got hundreds of letters. Look at them all. Look, there's one here. This chief constable's office. Police complaints commission. MPs. The Home Office. What about Jenny?
The bullet broke her thigh bone. It'll mend.
You know, I used to come home sometimes with Eric. Here to have a meal. I'd read her a bedtime story. She was always laughing. She was so happy.
He frowns and turns to the framed photo of Edwin.
Why did you do this to her?
Sean stands in a wood, staring into space. Neil slouches towards him. He stops in front of Sean, stuffs both hands in his pockets and fidgets awkwardly.
Well, as soon as school's over, I'm going to get a cheap flight somewhere hot and sit it out.
They start walking.
I'll be starting at Oxford in September. You'll be going off to Hull. Well, depending on the results. I'm expecting a disaster. I'm not you.
Neil glances at him, but his face remains impassive.
Mrs. Moorhead could have died.
She didn't.
So she's a lot better off than Brian Shanklin, right?
I never meant for
does
that
it matter? You did it. But you got a break. Take it. If people are afraid of you, you can do what you like. even murder. I can't get Brian out of my head.
I can.
I need to talk. And Dad won't talk about
it. What I need is never to see this place again. And you either.
Neil walks away. Frost sits brooding in his office, hands behind his head. He swings his seat gently from side to side.
Jack, I think I've got something on the hit and run. A postman. He saw the car about 2 miles from where it hit the girl.
Does he give us anything new?
It was stationary. But the car door was open and someone was leaning out. A man. Postman thinks he was throwing up.
Right.
Frost jumps from his seat and grabs his jacket. Later, they arrive at the scene of the collision, a peaceful country lane with cows grazing in the neighbouring field.
The man had his head out the driver's door. That's why the postman couldn't see him. There's no description, dark clothes, possibly a suit.
Not your average joyrider, then?
He also thinks there was someone else in the car, possibly a woman. But again, there's no description.
Ms. Parmenter reckons that she spent the night with Gregory Salmon. There's no alibi if they were both in the car. Hello? What is this? What's that look like to you?
Sick.
Exactly. And if that belonged to Gregory Salmon, we got him banged to rights. Scoop it up, George.
George reluctantly pulls some plastic gloves from his coat pocket. Sean is upstairs in his room, sitting cross-legged on the carpet.
Sean
hides some drugs.
Sean, open the door.
Frost drives Christine, Sophie and Joshua to their house. Mr. Moorhead steps out of his red Land Rover and comes towards them holding some files.
Hi, guys. You left these at my place. I don't know how you think you're doing your schoolwork without them.
Sorry.
Had to be in Reading anyway, thought I'd drop them off.
Thanks, Alan.
Coming in, Dad?
No, I'm late.
Oh. See you, Dad.
Bye.
Can we have a drink sometime, Jack? Jack, all right? No big deal. Just, you know, kids, and you're going to be around now.
Yeah, all right. Whenever you like.
Give you a belt.
Moorhead gets into his car. Frost closes the gate and watches him pensively. In the kitchen.
I can't believe Alan had the nerve. How dare he do that?
Guess he had a point.
The least he could have done is speak to me. I'd have told him what I thought about it as well.
That's probably why he didn't.
He's on his third partner. If I mentioned wanting to vet one of them, he'd go berserk. And now he wants to interrogate you because we've been out a couple of times.
She pours him a glass of white wine.
He seemed nice enough.
Yes, he can be.
Anyway, I had a very nice evening. I hope I did all right with the kids, I mean.
Yeah, you did.
She sits down next to him.
Though I have to say, I was a bit preoccupied. You didn't tell me someone tried to shoot you. I did hear about it.
He looks down sheepishly.
You don't want to talk about it.
It's just that it's all rather complicated. And I just wanted to get some fresh air tonight. And I got it. Thank you.
He takes her by the hand. She smiles and looks into his eyes. At first he looks down shyly. Then he returns her gaze. They lean towards each other. Their lips open.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. Frost.
He storms into George's office.
This better be worth my while.
Are you busy, Jack?
Yes.
Come and look at this. The evening before the hit and run, Gregory Salmon had an unlikely acquaintance, Berlin's fixer, Marek Lisowski.
CCTV footage.
Almost worth it.
He smiles. Alison Mansell Smith are drinking red wine in her office. She perches on the desk beside him.
They took a DNA swab from Greg.
Well, giving him an alibi doesn't seem such a good idea now, does it?
I don't recall you having a better one.
You know, I'm wondering if you might have to own up to lying for it now.
What does that mean?
Well, when it comes to the crunch, you might just have to admit that you lied. Because you love your man, but you can't keep on when there's a child.
You bastard.
Frost knows Greg asked you for an alibi. It's like an admission of guilt. Case closed. According to Darwin, it's what a billion years of life is all about. Survival of the bastards.
In the police station.
Jack? It wasn't Salmon puking out the car. It's not his DNA.
Oh, now, we've got a car that was burnt out on a piece of waste ground behind the shopping centre, which you need a car to get to or from.
Or a bus. Or a train. Ferndale Station is just over the road.
All right, try the station and the buses. Take a picture of Salmon with you.
But you've just told me...
I know that we don't think that he was there, but he's not telling the truth about... Look, just bring him in.
Salmon watches the CCTV footage in the interview room.
First, 50 grams of cocaine in the boot of your car given to you by one Marek Lizowski, who was employed by Jerry Burland. Lizowski was murdered. You were the last person to see him alive. Second, we have a witness who saw a couple in a car that hit a four-year-old girl and put her in a coma. There is no alibi if Ms. Parmenter was with you.
She wasn't. We were at home.
Frost looks surprised.
Oh. All right. Let's start with the cocaine.
It was for friends, it's for personal use. I wasn't making any money out of it.
Oh, right. You're just being Mr. Helpful then, are you?
Look, the way drugs are treated puts the trade into the hands of the criminals. Ordinary people just want a recreational drug.
Oh, really? Oh, well, don't worry about all the dead bodies from here to South America, then.
It's the law that needs changing.
Oh, is it? We'll have to see what we can do. All right, come on. What else did you do that night?
I'd been drinking. I wanted to try some of the stuff, so I went to a pub. I had a couple of shorts, bottle of wine, and then I went to the loo and I did a couple of lines.
Stone me. You were lethal and then you drove home.
I know I got back safely. It's just where I woke up the next morning.
That's a funny way of looking at it, isn't it?
I blacked out. I don't remember getting home. I don't remember getting to bed, but I know that I did. The next morning, the car was just gone. I was not driving that car that morning.
Frost frowns. He leans in towards Salmon.
Where was Ms. Parmenter?
She wasn't there. She's been lying to try and help me.
Frost raises his eyebrows.
Well, Mr. Salmon, apart from the possibility of jail, I don't think you'll practice law ever again.
He walks to the recorder.
It's Inspector Frost terminating the interview.
To the bald detective.
Right, that's it. Go on, off you go.
The puzzled detective gets up and heads for the door. He stations himself next to it.
I said off, go on, out!
The detective leaves. Salmon shoots Frost a nervous glance.
Right, now you got the cocaine from Jerry Burland, right?
Come on, if I testify against Jerry, I won't be practicing anything again.
I don't want you to testify. I want something off the record, anything. And if you help me get what I need, I could help you. Forget ethics. Think of survival.
It's a farm in Hertfordshire. Organic vegetables, and they import from all over the world, you know, French beans and avocados from Kenya, that kind of stuff.
Salmon scribbles on paper.
And it's Burland's business?
It's a holding company. Burland doesn't appear to own it, and there's certainly nothing connecting him to it.
Well, what's his involvement?
I'm pretty sure it's his money.
Why?
It's where he trains his dogs.
Oh, right.
So, what about this deal?
Well, if this leads anywhere, I'm sure the CPS will look sympathetically on the cocaine charges. Of course, there's no real evidence, is there?
I mean about the girl, the accident.
Oh, yeah. Well, according to the DNA evidence, it's most probable that you weren't involved. I'll keep you informed.
What? You lied to me. You implied that you...
You never once asked how she was. Did you know that?
A contemptuous Frost slams the interview room door on a frustrated Salmon.
Ah, Jack, good. On the hit and run. We found a taxi driver at Denton Station who dropped a couple off. Guess where?
George, I'm in no mood to play games.
Salmon's office. And from the description of the woman, it could be Alice Parmiter.
At Alice's office.
All right, Greg. Mr. Salmon did ask me to say I spent the night with him. I did it without thinking. But I wasn't there.
Frost glowers at Alice.
That's not quite true, is it? Hmm? You were there. Because you went to see Mr. Salmon with Mr. Mansell Smith because dear old Greg, he supplies the drugs that the police stupidly make illegal. You got a key, haven't you?
Yes.
Yes. So you know what I think? I think that you let yourself into Mr. Salmon's flat where you found him unconscious on his bed. You got what you wanted. Whether or not he brought the drugs up from the car or they were already there doesn't really matter. But then you both stayed the night. Because next morning, Mr. Mansell Smith decided he wanted to go for a drive. Mr. Salmon, he thought that his car had been stolen because he had left his keys in the ignition, but he didn't. You knew where they were. You were covering yourself all of the time. I can place you and Mr. Mansell Smith on a train and in a taxi that dropped you both off here the next morning. And when I have taken a swab, I will have the DNA of Mr. Mansell Smith, who threw up outside Mr. Salmon's car minutes before it knocked down Caitlin Callery and drove away. And that's just the beginning. You were in the car. You were the passenger.
George enters accompanied by a chastened Mansell Smith. Alice's eyes dart towards Mansell Smith, who rams his hands in his pockets.
No.
Frost swivels towards Alice in surprise.
David had just been sick. So I took over. I was driving.
Frost fixes Alice with a stare. He smiles. In intensive care, on Caitlin still wired up.
Will she go to prison?
I don't know, Mr. Callery.
They were drunk. Drugged up to their eyeballs. How does this woman not go to prison? Both of them.
Well, I hope we can prove something about the drugs and the drinking. We have some forensic evidence, but it's not as conclusive as catching the driver at the scene.
They're both lawyers.
Well, the CPS will be pushing for a custodial sentence, but I can't promise.
On an intubated, fragile Caitlin, at Berlin's house, Berlin saunters into the kitchen, a stack of holiday brochures tucked under his arm. Sean lounges on the sofa.
We talked about America, yeah?
Sure, why not?
I mean, we can look on the internet and everything, but take a month, 6 weeks, start in New York, go all the way across, eh? Route 66.
A hollow-eyed Sean ignores his father.
I say you go through St. Louis, Joplin, Missouri, Oklahoma City looks oh so pretty.
Sean does not respond.
Just follow the song. How about that?
Cool.
He walks off, leaving the brochures untouched.
Here, take these with you.
Berland points at the brochures. Sean, automaton-like, snatches them up.
He'll be all right when he's out there.
No, he won't. Can't you see that?
It's like you, is it?
I hope he isn't. I hope he finds a way of turning his back on everything you stand for.
Sally stalks out. On Berland alone on the sofa. At Denton Police Station.
It's a good location. Easy access to the motorway in the big cities. It's isolated. Surrounded by Forestry Commission land, so not very many neighbours.
Good location for money laundering.
Yeah, and for drug running as well. So, what do you think, Sam? Hey? Looks like infrastructure to me.
Have you talked to Lee Valley?
Yeah, as far as they're concerned, it's a farm. Never had any cause for concern except for traffic. You know, big lorries going in and out.
Sounds very promising.
Well, we can't go steaming in. We've got to know when the next delivery arrives.
We have got some intelligence.
Yeah, well, come on, I've shown you mine. You show me yours.
There is a delivery due, a big one. Monday or Tuesday, says the word on the street. And the same word on the street says that it's Berlin's firm. What we don't know is where it's going.
Well, could have a ruddy good guess, couldn't you?
Yeah, but it would just be a guess, wouldn't it? No, we'll set up an operation with Lee Valley. Put his place under observation. Wait and see. But, thanks, Jack.
Thanks, Jack. Oi, just a minute. What do you take me for? If you're going in after Jerry Berland, so am I.
This is a Met operation, Jack.
Well, to make it official, Mr. Mullet would like you to join him for luncheon.
Mullet? Come on, Jack, you're not serious.
Oh, yes, I am. Unfortunately, I can't join you. I have a prior engagement. But I'll catch up with you later. Mr. Mullet remembers you very well.
Ah, pleasure to see you again.
Sam.
Sam, of course. Let's go this way. Go to the canteen, shall we? Bite to eat. How's everything?
Frost smirks. Later in a pub garden.
I love my children. And whatever Christine says, I need to know what's going on. She hasn't been out with anyone, not in a long time.
I am what you see, Mr. Moorhead. My CV wouldn't impress you very much, not unless you're looking for a policeman. Though if you listen to my superintendent, he would have doubts about that.
I'm not asking questions. That side of it's none of my business. I just want to be able to say hello when I turn up at the house. I'm only over there to collect the kids, but the kids know. And they know there's more than... Well, you know...
Well, they're ahead of me.
Jack, they always are.
Well, they're good kids, Mr. Moorhead.
Despite us. And it's Alan. I'm sorry if you thought this was the Inquisition. It's just, you know, we will be bumping into each other.
No, I know. Well, do you want another one?
No, don't drink. And there's a limit to the amount of orange juice and lemonade a man can take.
Well, anyway, look, I'm sorry, I must go. Good to have met you.
And you, mate.
Moorhead eyeballs Frost, sizing him up. Inside the pub, Moorhead returns the empty glasses to the bar.
Sir?
Whiskey, large one.
Moorhead nods and smiles. In Berlin's kitchen, Berlin takes a lager from the fridge while Sally doles out takeaway. Berland wrenches off the top and gulps the drink down. He pushes the bottle to one side, shoots a glance at Sally, and makes a beeline for the stairs.
Sean?
He tries out the patio.
Sean! Dinner!
Berland clicks his fingers.
I'm having a beer!
He strides around to the side of the house. He opens the garage door. A pair of feet in trainers hang limply down.
Shut! Oh, shut!
He desperately grabs his son's feet and legs, trying to take the strain off his neck from the rope. Sally hears his anguished cries.
How?
He hanged himself.
Oh.
I can't tell you how many years I've been watching terrible things happen to people's children. And they always blame themselves. And too many times they're right to.
A despondent Mullet grimaces.
Well.
Mullet rises slowly from his seat.
Doesn't change the job today, does it?
A grim-faced Frost shakes his head.
Not for us, anyway.
Mullet turns and walks away, leaving Frost alone at the canteen table. He looks down at his untouched plate of food, his appetite gone. Outside Berlin's house, a haggard Berlin leans against a police ambulance. Sean's body, draped in a red velvet cloth, is trolleyed inside the vehicle. The ambulance drives off, escorted by a police car. Berland glances behind him at Carolyn and Viner. Neil looks on from his bedroom window, then turns away. A view of the two stone houses, Carolyn and Viner return to their front door. Berland cuts a solitary figure as he stares after the long-departed ambulance. An organic farm, an articulated truck trundles along a country lane. Frost spies on the truck through binoculars. Frost hands the binoculars to Craig. At Berland's house, Berland cracks open the bedroom door and peers in on a sobbing Sally, her face buried in a pillow. He closes the door softly and studies her.
Help me, Sally. Please, help me.
How can I? I can't help myself.
Berland fixes his gaze on the carpet.
I didn't know what he was feeling.
He rubs his face in despair.
I didn't know any of it.
He slumps onto the edge of the bed, his back to her supine form.
No, you didn't.
Sally struggles to sit up.
You couldn't.
She swivels her body towards Berlin's back.
Because you did it. You did it!
Sally punches him hard in the back. At the organic farm, patrol cars and vans speed into the farmyard where the truck is parked up. Frost slews a black Ford people carrier to a halt. Craig and Frost clamber out. In the yard, workers unloading pallets and shipping bags of compost are caught unawares by armed police. The police point automatic rifles at them. The workers drop to the floor, hands behind their heads. A gloved hand prizes up a secret compartment containing bags of cannabis resin.
We've got at least two who'll identify Berlin, so we're away. We're into the network now, here in Holland. And we're into the money, too. Criminal assets on a serious scale. We've got him.
He's still on my patch.
Then you bring him in, Jack. You bring him in.
It'll be a pleasure.
In Berland's sitting room, Berland leans against a bar, an untouched glass of whiskey at his side. Sally strolls in, carrying a holdall.
There's nothing left for us. I don't want to see you. Speak to you. Ever.
Sally turns her back and leaves. She stalks out of the front door and makes a beeline for her low-slung, open-top sports car. She clambers in. From her upstairs window, Carolyn Viner watches her go. Sally drives away. Inside Carolyn's bedroom, she approaches Tom Viner.
We let it happen too, Tom.
They focus on each other. Viner bites his bottom lip. Neil slouches through the open door.
I need to speak to the police. About Brian. It's what Sean wanted. what he wanted all along.
It's still not your fault.
Shut up. It's all our fault. For God's sake, let it be our fault.
Neil covers his face with his hand and weeps. Carolyn comforts him. In Berlin's sitting room, Berlin sits as he was when Sally entered. A solemn Frost approaches Berlin.
I heard about what happened, Jerry. I'm sorry. Very sorry.
Berlin bows his head.
Never even thought about Brian's mum and dad. You know that? He was everything. He was everything. It's just over. It's all over.
A distraught Berlin keeps his head bent.
It's all over.
He lifts his head and focuses on Frost.
Time to go, Jack.
Frost nods. Berlin rises from his seat. Frost follows him towards the front door. At Christine's house, night. Frost and Christine finish the remnants of an evening meal.
Still another boy. A dead boy. But a boy, just like Joshua. And none of it had to happen.
No. But mostly that's how it is.
Yeah.
Christine sups her glass of red wine.
And what about that woman?
Hmm?
The one who tried to kill you.
Oh.
You still haven't told me what happened. You made it sound as if it happened every day. But you left out, well, almost everything.
Almost.
Will it always be like that?
A lot of the time.
Frost focuses on her in earnest. Christine nods assent.
As long as I know.
She smiles, they raise their glasses. They put the glasses down, their hands extended across the table.
You shouldn't drive tonight.
Well, I was hoping I wouldn't have to.
She rubs her fingers across his hand. At Denton Police Station, George fills out paperwork.
Ah, good morning. Lovely morning. Ah, good morning, George.
Good morning.
Oh, you fancy a cup of coffee and a nice sticky bun? It's only 3 days old, so eat it while it's fresh-ish.
Frost holds the wrapping between thumb and forefinger. George gapes.
It's a nice surprise.
Tell me, George, have you...
Frost flips the lid off his coffee. He stirs the contents with a pencil.
Yeah.
Ever been a best man?
Oh, a long time ago. Don't tell me someone's asked you to be a best man.
I would be daft enough to do that.
Frost sucks the rubber end of his pencil. At a country church...
Then I take the ring and give it to you. You put it on Christine's ring finger. You continue to hold it. And then, William, you say, with this ring I thee wed.
With this ring I thee wed.
With my body I thee worship.
With my body I thee worship.
And with all my worldly goods I thee endow.
And with all my worldly goods I thee endow.
I say a prayer, then I say, those whom God hath joined together, let no man put asunder. If you want to kiss, well, that is the usual procedure, of course.
Well, we should make sure that's okay. William.
Good.
They kiss tenderly.
William. Oh, William, you. Thank you.
Outside the church, Christine drives off with Joshua and Sophie. George and Frost stroll out together.
Fancy a curry, Jack?
You ought to get home early and work on your best man speech. I'm assuming there's nothing embarrassing about me in it.
Oh, I've got a long memory. Come on, curry. I'll keep you company. That's what the best man does.
Yeah, all right.
In a curry house, A crowd stands up and cheers as Frost and George enter.
Thank you, George. If you ever hope to make Inspector, you've just blown your last chance. Thank you.
An embarrassed Frost weaves between the tables.
Oh, I get to sit with Mr. Mullet. It's even better.
I hope that was a surprise, Jack.
Well, yes, it certainly was, sir, and you know how I like surprises.
Now, before we get on with the festivities, I think I should say a few words. It may surprise some of you to know that Inspector Frost and I have not always seen eye to eye.
Yes.
It would be an exaggeration to say that he and I have been close over the years, but I will say this. However hard he tries to get away, I'll always find him.
Frost forces a smile.
Of course, I would never have made a detective of his caliber myself. And over time, he's taught me the value of instinct, gut feelings. I've even developed gut feelings of my own. So much so that it is extremely rare that I don't know when Inspector Frost is up to something that I shouldn't know about. Jack has dedicated his life to what he does. And whatever our disagreements, nobody does it better. Nobody does it with more honesty or commitment. And perhaps, Jack, I haven't always recognized that. So let's raise our glasses to Jack, our colleague and our friend. To Jack.
The gathering raises its glasses.
You're dead.
George lowers the pint from his lips. Frost wins politely at the applause. George smirks and sups at Christine's.
Do you know what tomorrow is?
I saw the light. I was passing.
What do you mean, passing?
Passing!
Shh. The kids are asleep.
I don't want you to do this.
What are you talking about?
Frost. Marrying him. You've only known him months. It's a bad idea. I don't think it's right for you. Or for Josh and Sophie. It's what I feel, Christine.
What you feel? You walked out of my life because of what you felt. You left me with two small children because of what you felt. Never mind what they felt.
It was a mistake. And I knew it was a mistake before I went.
I've been on my own. Most of the kids' lives. I'd given up the idea there'd ever be anybody. What are you trying to do to me, Alan?
I never loved any of the others.
You've been drinking. Oh, Alan. You're an alcoholic. You don't drink, ever.
I can make it up to you. We can start again. Never too late. We've got the kids, it can work.
You still think I'm your bloody property, don't you? Just get out of my house!
Don't tell me what to do. This was my house once, remember?
Don't you touch me! What are you doing? It's all right, it's all right. It's just going.
You're all right, Mum?
Yeah, it's fine.
Moorhead strides to the door, opens it and slams it too. Inside the church, the congregation is already gathering. George opens the rear door of the beribboned Rover.
Right. Thank you.
He clambers in the driver's seat.
How are you feeling?
How do I feel? I'm not sure. I feel happy. Yeah, that's what it is. I feel happy.
On a contented Frost. He gazes at the for sale sign outside his semi. He winks. A new life awaits. Outside Christine's house.
You look great.
Oh, you look fantastic.
Christine in a white suit slips into the rear of her car. Mullet lurks nervously outside the church entrance. Parked a slight distance away, a red Land Rover. Inside the vehicle, Moorhead ramps up the music on his car stereo system. He watches as various members of the congregation pull up in their cars. He sips from a hip flask. Inside the church, the pews fill with colourful revellers. Outside, Frost's car pulls up in front of an excited Mullet. A white carnation adorns the superintendent's uniform. Moorhead undoes his seatbelt and fires the Jeep engine into life.
Here we are, Jack.
Thank you.
And
Mullet opens the rear passenger door and hands Frost and George a carnation each. He looks up to see the Land Rover careering towards the wedding car. The Land Rover slams into the car's side. Later, a police car swerves into view, sirens blaring. Christine, still in her wedding outfit, leaps out and sprints to the hospital entrance. A nurse leads her to a cubicle where the bruised and battered Frost lies stretched out.
Jack!
Oh, I seem to make a habit of making a mess of important things. I should have told you that, shouldn't I?
What have they said?
Well, apart from you taking a trolley, when can we have it back, you mean?
Jack, please.
No, I'm all right. I'm all right. I was just a bit battered and bruised, that's all.
I saw George.
Oh, yeah. He's taken a trolley as well, hasn't he? Yeah, he's got a broken arm. Mr. Mallet's all right. He'll just need a new suit, that's all. How's Alan?
A tearful Christine shakes her head.
I'm sorry, love.
Right, we're going to get you down to X-ray now, Mr. Frost. Make sure there's nothing going on we don't know about. Are you ready, then?
Yes, thank you, Doctor. I'll be all right, love. I'll be all right.
Just concussion kicking in.
Excuse me, Doctor!
Coming through!
Excuse me.
Nurses push a gurney carrying George's lifeless form.
Get the door! Hey, go!
In the hospital waiting area, a shocked Mullet and Frost sit hunched on chairs, each lost in their own thoughts. A door slams to, shaking Frost out of his torpor. A doctor walks down the corridor. Mullet gets to his feet. He hesitates at the entranceway.
Are you going to operate? No, that's not an option.
On an anguished Frost and Mullet.
There must be something. His heart was stopped too long. The truth is, it's just a machine that's keeping him alive now.
And you've got to switch it off.
We have no other choice.
Frost stares up at the stricken Mullet.
Mrs. Toulon wanted you to be there.
Frost half nods. The doctor walks away. At George's bedside, George, surrounded by tubes and wires, a priest intones.
Now we see through a glass darkly, then shall we see face to face. Now I know in part.
Mrs. Toulon nods for the doctor to switch off the machinery.
And now abide of faith.
On a grim-faced Frost.
These three, and the greatest of these, is love.
Mrs. Toulon plants a kiss on the lifeless George's forehead. a view of an intubated George. Frost stands stiffly at the end of George's coffin, the insignia of the County Constabulary draped over it. He touches the lid softly and pats it.
Goodbye, George.
He trudges down the aisle. Christine is sitting in one of the pews. He takes a seat beside her. He slumps slowly down.
It's hard to see a way back from all of this.
I know. But we will. I've already made my vows, Jack. I made them at the rehearsal. For better, for worse. I meant it.
Frost smiles. He nods in agreement.
Denton Police Station has always been a refuge, as well as a job for me. Stopped me thinking about anything else. I don't think I feel that anymore. And I often thought that I'd left it too late to be anything other than a policeman. No, I don't think that. George had a life that wasn't just about being a policeman. In fact, I think it was most of his life. And I know that sometimes he felt sorry for me because I hadn't. You know, I hadn't had what he had. But now we've got a life to live. And we've got an awful lot to cram in. Come on, let's go.
He gets up. Christine follows suit. Outside, they clasp hands and stroll away between an avenue of trees. Audio description by ITFC.